Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, did you ever wonder what would happen if land in your community was rezoned? Our next guests have come up with an online game that will help give you a really good idea. Couple of guests for you today. David Schaefer, one of them, is the Vilas Distinguished Achievement Professor of Learning Sciences in the Department of Educational Psychology. He directs the Epistemic Analytics Lab. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here.
Great to have you with us. Andrew Ruiz, a researcher in the Epistemic Games Group and a fellow in the Department of Surgery and the Department of Medical History and Bioethics at UW-Madison as well. And Andrew, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
As we visit with these two guys, I hope you'll join in. We're going to talk about the new game, who it's helping, and why it's a good tool for educational purposes. And you might have some questions about it. Maybe you're an educator. Have games helped you teach? Are you a parent? Have games helped your child? Join in. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us. The email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. David, before we talk about the new game, maybe you can tell us about your lab.
Sure. So my lab has been around for, well, I guess the best part of 20 years here at UW. And we're interested in understanding how people do complex thinking, solve problems of the kind you can't do on a multiple choice test, do the kind of work that you do, do the work that journalists do, think like doctors and architects and lawyers, solve problems in the real world. We've been interested in developing tools that help people learn to do that, and also the tools that we need to understand whether and how and why they've done it.
Yeah, well, it's pretty interesting. You have some amazing projects going on. Maybe be a little more specific and talk about some of them.
Sure, I can talk a little bit, although I think that one of the best of them is actually the thing that we were supposed to be talking about today, which is iPlan. So I have a colleague, Jeremy Stoddard, who also is a professor in curriculum instruction here at UW. He works as one of the principal investigators in the lab. He's developed a project called Purple State, which lets students take on a political campaign, a media campaign to try and convince people to do more fracking or do less fracking or other controversial issues. And they get a chance to buy radio ads and start social media campaigns and try and influence the public. It's based on real data, real polling data around the issues. They have access to real news sources. And it's a great way for them to understand civics. The iPlan game, which we'll talk more about, it's a way for students to understand, well, why their cities and towns and countryside looks the way that it does. What would happen if we change those things? What are the relationships between jobs and housing and pollution and the number of birds that we see on the street. So those are the kinds of problems that we want to help kids learn to solve. And then we also have projects that try and understand, well, how are they thinking about those problems? And to keep that brief, you know, complex thinking isn't just about knowing two or three or four things that you can spit back on a test. Complex thinking is actually understanding the relationships between ideas. And yeah. So what our tools do is look at what students are doing in these games and figure out what relationships they're making between ideas. When they think about whether or not they should, put more housing in a town, do they understand what its impact will be on jobs? Do they understand how much greenhouse gases that will produce and so on? So it's that sort of complex thinking that we then create a mathematical model of, and we can measure the extent to which students are thinking about real problems rather than how well they're doing in the SAT.
Oh, man. Andrew, tell us about your work with the lab then. How do you fit into all this?
Yeah, so in my role as Associate Director for Research, I actually work on pretty much all of the projects, but the iPlan project, which I know we're going to talk quite a bit more about during this time, as a project that I kind of took the lead on and really helped develop. And so that one has been very near and dear to my heart. And so I'm looking forward to talking about that quite a lot more. And then I also work on projects on the analytics side, as David mentioned, that we're really interested in learning more about how to model complex thinking. And I've done some work in that area, mostly around medical and health topics.
Yeah, I was wondering how actually this work fits in with your work in the Department of Surgery and the Department of Medical History and bioethics.
Yeah, so we've actually done quite a lot of work figuring out how to model things like how surgeons are thinking when they're doing an operation, for example, or how they integrate different skills and ideas and attitudes in a particular operative context. Because that's, again, as David pointed out, in the real world, the things that people do are far too complex to really measure with simple metrics. And so we need to come up with better ways to assess that kind of those kinds of behaviors and those kinds of actions and activities. Because if we're going to help people learn to do them better, we have to have good models of how they're already doing them.
You know, as I think about this, I would imagine the staff as a whole come from a variety of backgrounds, perhaps. What kinds of backgrounds do they come from, David?
So we have quite a diverse staff. There are a number of graduate students who are in some ways the backbone of the work that we do. That's the way the university is supposed to be set up. You've met Andrew. We have a fabulous lead programmer, Cody Marquardt. Who is essentially the genius behind how all these things fit together and when you look at them on your computer. Cesar Hinojosa is our graphic designer and user interface designer. And he everything looks the way that it does because he's blessed it with his magic touch. Carl Zichankai is a staff scientist, and he's the mathematical genius behind the way all these things, all the models work on the back end. And then, of course, we have Allison Linder, who is our fabulous administrative director, and makes sure that, we're not running around with scissors and hurting ourselves while we're building all these great things. So it's really quite a big team. And we're so excited, actually, to be getting back into the office and working together around whiteboards and being able to, do more than just talk to each other on Zoom, because that's a lot of where the magic comes, is from the collaboration.
Absolutely. I would agree wholehearted with you on that part of it. Well, this iPlan game, let's get into that a little bit. And you started to talk about the iPlan game. And so the idea behind it is to help people learn what are the consequences of decisions that are made relating to community planning.
Yeah, that's exactly right. What iPlan allows you to do is it gives you a Google Maps interface, and it allows you to choose any location in the lower 48. And once you've chosen a location, it makes a land use map of that location. It's using real land use data. And it gives you a simplified but accessible kind of land use map of that region that you've selected. And then it allows you to choose some different things that you might want to model that are affected by land use. That might be things like housing or jobs. It might be environmental issues like greenhouse gas emissions, air and water pollution, wildlife populations, a whole host of different things. So you can select a few of these. And then it constructs a model, a local model of that region and those indicators. And it allows you then to go in and make some land use changes. So you can take an area that's predominantly housing and make it commercial, or you can take an area that's currently cropland and make it into housing, or any number of other changes that you want to see the effects of. And then what the game does is it shows you what happens when you do that. It shows you the effects on things like jobs, on agricultural production, on wildlife populations, and so on. And so in that sense, it's a kind of simplified scientific model so that, anybody can kind of access an easily accessible model of how those things work. But what makes iPlan really special is it also allows you to create new scenarios, new land use plans, new zoning maps, and submit them to simulated stakeholders. the stakeholders are people like that represent businesses or that are environmental activists or represent neighborhoods. And they all have different interests. They all care about different things, just like in the real world. And so you can submit different plans to these groups of essentially concerned citizens, and you get feedback from them so that you can learn more about what you think about them.
And we'll certainly talk some more about this as we visit with our two guests, David Schaefer, professor of learning sciences in the Department of Ed Psych and director of the Epistemic Analytic Lab. And you just heard from Andrew Ruiz, a researcher in the Epistemic Games Group, a fellow in the Department of Surgery and Department of Medical History and Bioethics at UW-Madison. We are going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll dig deeper into this whole iPlan project. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at solving real-world problems with an online game, and a couple of guests for you today. David Schaefer, the Vilas Distinguished Achievement Professor of Learning Services in the Department of Educational Psychology. He directs the Epistemic Analytics Lab. And Andrew Ruiz, the Associate Director for Research at the Lab, and a researcher in the Epistemic Games Group. He's a fellow in the Department of Surgery and the Department of Medical History and Bioethics at UW-Madison. So, as we talk with these two experts, I hope you'll join in. What are your experiences with using games maybe as a learning tool? Or if you're a parent, what have you observed in your children and their use of games? Has it helped them or maybe hurt them? What questions do you have about the iPlan games? That's the one we're zeroing in on today. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas at WPR.org, ideas at WPR.org. Let's go back to the game plan. First, why do you think a tool like this is needed?
Well, I think there's a few reasons. Most obvious of which is that we face really big environmental challenges right now. Global climate change is, of course, the biggest of them, but there are many. And it's very difficult for young people to think about things and understand how they work at a big scale. And there's an old saying, which is, think globally, act locally. But it turns out that thinking globally isn't so easy. And so what this simulation does is actually lets you take these big issues of climate change and pollution and the environment and social justice, and to actually see how they play out in your backyard and understand what the real world consequences that you can actually see might be to some of these challenges that we face on a big scale.
You know, as you were talking, I was thinking about a show that where the topic came up of some land use policies in Texas, and Texas probably isn't alone in this, where there was a lot of new housing construction and wetlands were gotten rid of, essentially, for the housing, and then the rains came with the climate change, and there was severe flooding. And I'm wondering, would and maybe Andrew, you would this iPlan recognize an issue like this? That's kind of a long term thing, but what do you think?
Yeah, this is exactly the kind of thing that we designed iPlan to do. When you make decisions about land use, you're actually making very complex decisions, and those decisions have very long-lasting consequences. And so one of the things that the system tries to do is show you directly, right, if I change this wetland parcel to this housing parcel, what effects is that going to have on things in the real world? Right. Well, first of all, it's going to create more housing. There'll be more places for people to live, but it's going to potentially have some negative environmental impacts as well. But more than that, it's also going to allow you to find out how different people in a community might think about that kind of change, right? It's not just that it may have specific social and environmental consequences, it's that different people care differently about those sorts of things. So an environmental group might be very upset that you are reducing wetland space, but a group in an area that's really concerned about not having enough housing might be more supportive of that kind of change. And a lot of what happens in land use planning and land use management is negotiation across a number of different competing interests.
And just thinking about who's involved, or the kids or students or whatever who may be involved in this iPlan game, I think it must develop a kind of interest among them, or it would seem to me that it would develop an interest in them in the STEM top, you know, science, the technology, the engineering, and the math would all play a role in that, and hopefully would develop a stronger interest among students. What do you think, David?
Well, that's why the National Science Foundation funded the development of the game. Actually, that was the plan, and of course, part of it is that there are important concepts in science and technology and that are embedded in the game. But it's also, just as you say, people start to realize that these questions actually are what shape the world around us. And if you want to participate in making the world a better place, these are some of the things that you're going to have to learn about and understand. One of the things that the game does is it actually provides a tool to let you examine the way in which people have reacted to your plans in the game, and to try and calibrate how much change is appropriate and what everybody wants. And so it's this complex visualization of a set of, you know, numbers about housing and crime and pollution and jobs, and you're trying to figure out how to balance all of these. And so it's a tricky mathematical exercise as well as an exercise in understanding the underlying relationships.
It was, how does it look? You know, if we were doing this on TV, for example, we'd be able to take a look at your screen and see. But describe what it might look like to the person. And Andrew, you were talking about you can zero in on any area in the 48, lower 48. But then what do you see?
Yeah, so the sort of backbone of the game is literally a map. We use a Google Map interface, so that it's something that people are generally familiar with. You can zoom in and out. You can pan around, and we layer over that basic Google Map the land use map. So you have different parcels that are dividing up the region, and they're color-coded, and they have little icons that tell you what they are. Is it wetlands? Is it timber? Is it cropland? Is it housing? Is it lower high-density housing? That sort of thing. And then you can manipulate that map. So if you click on, or if you're on a phone or a tablet, if you touch one of the parcels, it highlights it, and it pulls up a menu that allows you to change it to something else. So if I tap on a housing parcel and I want to change it to anything else, like say industrial or commercial, then I can just do that. And then when I do, it shows me on the screen what the effect is on those different indicators that I chose to include. So it might show me that if I changed housing to industrial, for example, it'll show me a decrease in housing, but it'll also show me an increase in greenhouse gas emissions, for example. And so it allows me to kind of see the immediate effects of those changes, and then I can submit those things to the simulated stakeholders. And as David mentioned, there's a whole separate interface in there that allows you to interact with the stakeholder feedback side of things. So you can see the different stakeholders and learn about them and get feedback from them in the form of text. But you can also use a graphing tool to see the difference between different plans that you've come up with and how different individuals, different simulated stakeholders have reacted to those plans.
And so I'm trying to put this into my thought, into words here a little bit, but I'm wondering, so the politics are kind of taken out. It's a neutral look at things in the sense that all competing interests get to you hear from them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, so we did our best to design the stakeholders to be kind of broadly representative, because this has to work kind of anywhere in the lower 48. So it can't be too specific to any one part of the country, but we designed them to be very broadly representative of the kinds of people that engage in land use debates. And that's often business interests, residents and citizen groups, and environmental activists are some of the people that tend to be the most active in those debates.
Yeah, got it. Well, we have some callers online. Maybe let's take some calls. Dennis in Two Rivers, we'll go to you. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. When you mentioned Texas and land use, I thought, well, what about a border wall? Because that would enter into whether people have the right to decide whether to sell land, and it also has environmental concerns. So does that enter into this? I'll hang up and listen.
It doesn't. It doesn't, in part because a simulation like this, doesn't represent absolutely everything about every place in the country, and the border wall is sort of a unique feature for just some of the country. And also, we started building this before the border wall was as much of an issue as it is today. But one of the point that the caller makes is a really good one, in the sense that one of the things that this does is provides an ability for people to actually see what different parts of the country look like, and where are the wetlands, and where is timber, and it's something that we don't usually have the ability to zoom in on in this way, and so we've talked about this in terms of kids using it and learning about land use, but there are many communities that don't have the money to construct land use surveys of this kind. And if they want to make changes in their zoning and local ordinances, it's very hard for people to actually, see what things look like. So the fact that this is a really high fidelity, very accurate representation based on, essentially land use surveys from USGIS. We've worked with the folks at the Nelson Institute to make sure that it's a pretty realistic model. So in addition to being a really cool game, it's actually a really useful tool for people to understand the world around them.
Yeah.
Except for the border wall.
Okay, well, Ed in Northern Illinois has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Ed. Thanks for calling.
Good afternoon. Question regarding affordable housing. A lot of it is in existing or future floodplains, and that has a lot to do with disaster response, which I've been involved in. How does your tool address supporting that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Right now, we don't have that directly modeled into the system, as David pointed out, right? We are limited in how many different things that we can model, although we certainly have plans to include exactly that issue and a number of other issues in future development. This is sort of our version 1.0 at this stage, and we have a lot of plans to include those kinds of things, because those are the kinds of things that teachers, for example, have told us that they're very interested in and working on with students. And one of the things that we've found is that even when the system doesn't model directly the issue that you might care about, whether that's border walls or whether that's the intersection of low-income housing and flood, floodplains and flooding issues, the tool still allows them to have much more complex and grounded conversations with students about those issues, because they can kind of model some of these basic relationships in the system and get a little bit more of a grip on how those things work. And it allows them access to those kinds of issues that are otherwise very complicated to talk about with young people.
So this is National Science Foundation funding. And so are you in fact working in the classroom with students at this point?
Yeah, so because of COVID, we were pretty limited in what we were able to do, and certainly getting into classrooms has been more of a challenge. But we have fantastic partners in the Massachusetts Audubon Society, who have been longtime partners in this work with us, and they do a lot of programming both in schools and out of schools with young people around environmental education, and working with them and also directly with other teachers, we've been able to CI plan implemented in a lot of classroom contexts and a lot of informal learning contexts. And teachers have been really excited about, you know, the ability to do these kinds of activities with their students. This is an area that isn't usually covered by standard curricula, and it's a really important one, not only for teachers who are interested in teaching about things like climate change and watershed management and water quality issues and a whole range of other issues. But they also are able to interest their kids in civic topics, which can be very challenging, right? Things that that students know about that they can then develop an interest in, and to do that in their own backyards has been a really powerful teaching tool.
I'm thinking too that there are kids out there, and I know some who don't do as well with traditional teaching methods. Let's put it that way. Do these games help those kids?
Well, I mean, anything that's non-traditional helps some kids who don't like traditional learning. That seems pretty straightforward. But, what this does is it gives students who may not have all the traditional academic skills a way to participate in discussions in the classroom about something because, even if they're, let's say, reading level isn't this high, there's still ways that they can engage with this and contribute to the discussion because it's not just based on reading. So it gives the possibility for multiple points of entry for kids into kind of the academic content. I'll also say though that we've designed this. We've had several versions of the same idea, and the previous versions were really designed specifically for the classroom. And while this is designed to be something that in response to feedback that we got from teachers and the teachers really like to use in the classroom, it's also just a fun game. And we wanted to be sure that this was something that somebody could just pick up and play on their own and that it would be enjoyable and that they could learn something just sitting at home or that a parent could use it with their younger child and actually have some of those same discussions that teachers have. So partly we're trying to achieve, explicit educational goals in school. But we also think that this is the kind of thinking that people should be able to do and the kind of tool that people should have access to, whether or not they're in a classroom.
Last night the Madison City Council voted down a rezoning request of land, I think, near Truax Field. And that gets me thinking, is there, and regardless of what you think about that one way or the other, is this a tool that actually city councils or county boards or other people may be able to use who are adults and already involved in this kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's even been done before. A number of years ago, we had a partnership with CARPC, the Capital Area Regional Planning Commission, where they did exactly that as part of their, I believe as part of their 2020 planning. They worked with us to build a kind of custom model similar to the kinds of models that iPlan now produces. And they put it on tablets and computers at libraries and community centers and places around town and actually had anybody who was interested come in and use the model to show how they would address, say, something like a rising population, but also concern about preserving water quality. And it worked really well as a tool for gathering information from people who might otherwise just have to fill out a survey or come and talk around a poster. This way they could actually interact with the model and not only learn something about the process, but have a much better way to communicate how they're thinking about land use, which is extremely useful for land use planners.
I would think so. There are so many parts to creating. To make it simple for anybody who picks up, goes to the computer and starts in, it may seem pretty straightforward, but there are a lot of parts to this. And even where do you begin the process on something like this?
Well, the whole project has been something that we've been working on. Well, from its very infancy, it's been basically 17 or 18 years that we've been working on these ideas. And for this particular version, I think the biggest step was trying to figure out how to make this something that would work anywhere. How is it that you just get all that data together so that you can look at just Madison, you can look at the whole state of Wisconsin and everything in between and do that in any state? So that was a big challenge. And there were some great folks who worked with us. Holly Gibbs was at a lab in the geography department was extremely helpful. There's some other folks, too. Andrew, you probably know the full list better than I.
Yeah, Carol Barford, who's the director of SAGE, the Center for Sustainability and the Global Environment at the Nelson Institute, and Tyler Lark, and we had some really fabulous GIS experts, Matt Bougie and Bei-Chen Tian, who really, you know, helped to make sure that the geospatial aspects of this and the sort of scientific relationships between land use and different indicators are really robust in the system. So even though we're making it accessible to, say, teenagers or to adults who don't know anything about land use or land use planning, we wanted to make sure that the underlying science was really firm, because it was really important to us that people see real relationships when they play this. So this isn't just SimCity. This is actually a really good model of how the world works.
And so can anybody listening today, or would anybody listening today be able to say, gee, I'd like to go and take a look at this where I, you know, and maybe, you know, try it out myself. Is that a possibility, Andrew?
Yeah, absolutely. It's free and online, and anybody who wants to use it, you just have to make a free account, and then you can choose the location you want to model, and you can be off to the races. You can make as many models as you'd like. You can share them with other people, see who of you can, you know, come up with the best land use plan for that region, and really the sky's the limit. So we're really hoping that lots of people will want to try this out, either for themselves or as part of an educational program.
And where do we go, and where do they go to get involved in that?
Yeah, so we have a website that people can visit. I should have had this handy, but let me pull up so I make sure I give everybody the right address. So it's i-plan.us. There's a lot of information about the
You're breaking up a little bit, but i-plan.us.
Yes.
And we'll put that up on our page today, the Larry Mueller Show page, and we'll have a link to it in case you didn't get it, because I bet a lot of people are going to want to go take a look at it and just try it out. Andrew, David, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. And we'll get them back. We'll do it again. David Schaefer and Andrew Ruiz from the University of Wisconsin. And they're talking about the I-Plan. Thank you all for listening. Tomorrow, Poet Laureate Rita Dove will be with us to talk about her latest.